A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been shopping for shelving and storage solutions, the kind of thing that sits in that weird gray zone between consumer retail and actual B2B, and he's hitting the classic Israeli negotiation paradox. You hear it everywhere. Everything is negotiable in Israel. Except it's not. Try haggling over a toaster at Superfarm, and you'll get a blank stare and maybe security called. The stuff sold by small to medium vendors who serve both walk-in customers and businesses. That's where the price tag starts to feel more like a suggestion than a commandment. Daniel's problem is that he knows this, intellectually, but actually asking for a better price makes him cringe. He doesn't want to come off as aggressive or greedy. Especially with vendors, he might want to deal with long-term. So his question is, basically, what separates the people who get discounts from the people who don't? And how do you ask without feeling like a jerk?
The short answer is that the people who get discounts are the people who ask. That's it. But the longer answer is way more interesting, because the cringe Daniel's feeling isn't just personal discomfort. It's a category error. He's applying consumer brain to a B2B transaction, and those two worlds run on completely different scripts.
Consumer brain versus B2B brain. Okay, unpack that.
When you walk into a retail chain, Superfarm, an electronics store, whatever, the price on the shelf is the price. The cashier has zero authority to change it. The margins are razor thin. The whole system is built on volume and speed. There's no negotiation buffer baked in because there's no negotiation expected. But when you're buying industrial shelving from a warehouse supplier in Tel Aviv or custom storage units from a small manufacturer, you've crossed into a different universe. These vendors are serving both consumers and businesses, and they build in what researchers call a negotiation buffer, typically 15 to 25% above their actual floor price, specifically because they expect serious buyers to push back.
The higher price isn't the real price. It's the opening bid in a conversation they're waiting for you to start.
And here's the thing most people miss. In Israeli B2B culture, not negotiating doesn't make you polite. It makes you look like you don't understand how business works. You're signaling, I'm not a serious buyer, by accepting the first number without question. The vendor walks away thinking either you're naive or you're so wealthy you don't care, and neither of those gets you better treatment next time.
That's a brutal reframe. The thing Daniel thinks is being respectful is actually being read as clueless.
I wouldn't say clueless, but definitely inexperienced. If you've spent your whole life in consumer transactions, asking for a discount feels like asking for a favor. It feels personal. But in B2B, it's not personal at all. It's just the mechanics of how deals get done. The vendor has already priced in the expectation that you'll negotiate. If you don't, you're leaving money on the table they were ready to give up anyway.
The first thing Daniel needs to internalize is that the cringe is based on a misunderstanding. He thinks he's asking for a special favor. The vendor thinks he's participating in a standard business ritual.
There's actual data on this. Research on B2B purchasing in Israel shows that somewhere between 60 and 70% of buyers who ask for a discount receive at least some concession. That's not because vendors are generous. It's because the system is designed to produce that outcome. The initial quote is inflated, the buyer asks. The vendor concedes to a number that was always acceptable, and everyone walks away feeling like they won.
The discount is theater with real money attached. But that's actually liberating once you understand it. You're not breaking any social contract by asking. You're fulfilling your role in a script the vendor already knows by heart. I want to sit with the psychology for a second, because Daniel said he doesn't want to seem aggressive or greedy. There's something about the word greedy that's interesting. Like asking for a better price is somehow taking something from the vendor rather than arriving at a mutually acceptable number.
That's exactly the consumer brain trap. In consumer transactions, the price is fixed and fair is fair. If you ask for less, you're asking the store to eat a loss. But in B2B, the vendor's floor price is already calculated to include their profit margin. They're not losing money when they discount from the inflated quote. They're just making slightly less than the maximum they hope for. And they'd rather make a sale at a smaller margin than no sale at all.
The greed is already on their side, if we're being honest. The 15 to 25% buffer is them trying to capture surplus from buyers who don't know the game.
I wouldn't even call it greed, it's just standard business practice. But yes, the asymmetry of information is the whole reason negotiation exists. They know the real price. You don't. The conversation is how you close that gap.
Which brings us to the actual mechanics. Daniel's asking how to do this without feeling like a jerk, and I think part of the answer is having specific phrases ready. Because the cringe is partly just not knowing what words to use.
There's a huge difference between a demand and a question. Saying, "Give me a discount," is aggressive. Saying, "Is there any flexibility on the price?" It leaves room for the vendor to say no without losing face, and it signals that you're open to a conversation rather than issuing an ultimatum.
The question frame, it's the difference between I'm taking something from you and I'm curious whether there's room to move.
Is that your best price? Works the same way. It's almost collaborative. You're inviting the vendor to reconsider their own number, not attacking it. The phrasing makes it about the price, not about them.
I've also heard people have success with, I really like this, but it's a bit above what I was hoping to spend. Is there anything we can do? That makes it about your budget rather than their pricing.
That's a solid one, especially because it gives the vendor an easy out. They can say, let me see what I can do, without admitting their initial quote was inflated. It preserves the relationship while still signaling that you're price sensitive.
I think that's the core of Daniel's concern. He's worried about damaging a potential long-term relationship over a few hundred shekels.
That's the counterintuitive part, and it's backed up by research on Israeli business culture. Directness is not just tolerated here, it's appreciated. When you negotiate, you're demonstrating that you understand the market, that you're a serious buyer, and that you respect the vendor enough to engage with them as a business equal rather than just passively handing over money.
By not negotiating, Daniel might actually be weakening his position as a future repeat customer. The vendor doesn't remember him as the nice, polite guy. The vendor doesn't remember him at all.
Or worse, remembers him as the guy who paid full price without question, which means he gets the inflated quote again next time. The person who negotiates gets the real price from day one, and every future transaction starts from a place of mutual understanding.
Let's talk about the shelving and storage market specifically, because Daniel's instinct that this category is different is exactly right. What makes shelving and storage a negotiation-friendly category?
A few things. First, these are often semi-custom or configurable products. You're specifying dimensions, materials, load capacity, configuration. Once there's customization involved, the vendor has way more flexibility on pricing because the product doesn't have a single fixed cost. Second, these vendors are typically small to medium businesses, not giant chains. The person you're talking to often has the authority to adjust pricing on the spot. And third, shelving and storage are exactly the kind of purchase where repeat business is common. Someone furnishing a home office today might need warehouse shelving next year, or might tell five friends. The vendor's incentive to build a relationship is real.
All of which means the negotiation buffer is almost certainly baked in. If you're getting a quote for 4,500 shekels of industrial shelving, the real number is probably closer to 3,800.
We've seen exactly that case. Someone buying industrial shelving from a Tel Aviv warehouse supplier, initial quote 4,500 shekels, asks, is that your best price? And the vendor immediately drops to 3,800. That's a 15% reduction, just for asking a single question. The vendor later admitted they priced it expecting negotiation.
700 shekels for four words? That's a pretty good hourly rate.
It's the best paid four words most people will ever speak. And the vendor wasn't offended, they just moved to the number they'd always planned to accept.
What about the flip side? Daniel mentioned that some people are just brazen, and that brazenness seems to be what separates the discount getters from everyone else. Is brazenness actually the right word?
I don't think it is. Brazenness implies shamelessness, a willingness to be pushy. But what actually works isn't brazenness, it's comfort with the business norms of the situation. The people who get discounts aren't the ones who are loudest or most aggressive. They're the ones who understand that asking is expected and do it casually, without apology or confrontation. It's not, give me a better price or I walk. It's, hey, is there any room on this? Delivered with the same tone you'd use to ask if they have something in a different color.
The casualness is the whole game. If you're visibly uncomfortable, the vendor senses it and might hold firm because they know you won't push. If you ask like it's the most natural thing in the world, it signals that you do this regularly and know what you're doing.
If you're not someone who does this regularly, which Daniel admits he isn't, the solution is preparation. Practice the phrase in advance. Have it ready so you're not fumbling for words in the moment. The goal is to make it feel automatic even when it isn't.
There's also a timing element. When do you ask? After they've put time into a quote.
Generally, after they've given you a number, but before you've committed to anything. The moment they say it'll be 4,500, you have a window. Don't let it close. If you say, okay, let me think about it, and walk away, coming back later to negotiate is harder because the momentum is gone. The ask should be immediate, casual, and in the flow of the conversation.
The script is, they quote, you pause for half a beat, and then, is that your best price? Or any flexibility on that? Delivered like you're asking about delivery times.
Then you stop talking. That last part is crucial. People tend to fill silence with justifications or backtracking. Ask the question and let the vendor respond. The silence is uncomfortable, but it's your ally. It puts the pressure on them to fill it.
The negotiation power move is shutting up.
It really is. I've seen more deals swing on a well-timed silence than on any clever argument. The vendor quotes, you ask the question, and then you wait. They'll either say yes, offer a smaller discount, or say no. All three outcomes are fine. Even a no doesn't damage anything. You just say, okay, worth asking, and proceed.
If they say no, that's not the end. You can pivot to non-price concessions. What about free delivery? Can you throw an installation? Any discount for cash payment?
The cash payment angle is especially powerful in Israel, where many small businesses prefer cash transactions for reasons we probably don't need to elaborate on. Offering to pay in cash can often unlock a discount that wasn't available otherwise, because it changes the vendor's cost structure.
We've got the question frame, the casual tone, the strategic silence, and the backup asks. That's already a toolkit. But I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier about the relationship angle, because I think it's the most powerful lever Daniel has, and he might not realize it.
The future business card.
Daniel said he's worried about damaging long-term relationships. But mentioning future business is actually the strongest negotiation tool available, and it's completely honest. If he's genuinely planning to buy more later, saying so transforms the conversation from a one-time haggle to a relationship investment.
The research bears this out. When a buyer explicitly mentions future purchases, the vendor's calculus shifts from, how much can I make on this transaction, to how much can I make on this customer over time? A 10% discount now is trivial if it secures 3 more orders down the line. But the vendor won't make that calculation unprompted. You have to surface it.
The phrasing becomes something like, I'm planning to furnish a few more rooms over the next year. If we can agree on a good price for this order, I'd rather come back to you than shop around each time. That's not aggressive. That's offering a business relationship.
It's the kind of framing that actually makes the vendor feel good about discounting. They're not losing money, they're investing in a customer relationship. It reframes the discount from a concession to a strategic decision.
Which is exactly the kind of reframe Daniel needs for his own psychology. He's not asking for a favor. He's proposing a mutually beneficial arrangement.
That's really the through line here. Everything we're describing, the question frame, the casual tone, the future business mention, they all serve the same purpose, turning what feels like a confrontational demand into a collaborative conversation. The cringe comes from framing it as me versus them. The solution is framing it as us figuring out a deal that works.
To bring it back to Daniel's original question, what separates the people who get discounts from the people who don't? It's not brazenness. It's understanding the game, preparing the right phrases, and reframing the ask from a personal favor to a business norm. The people who get discounts are the people who know they're supposed to ask and who've practiced how to do it without flinching.
The people who don't get discounts are the ones who pay the negotiation buffer without ever knowing it was there, which is the real cost of the cringe. It's not just discomfort. It's leaving 15 to 25% on the table every time because you were too polite to say 4 words.
That's a pretty expensive politeness.
The thing is, once you do it once and it works, once you ask, is that your best price? And the vendor casually knocks off 700 shekels like it's nothing. The cringe evaporates. Because you've seen behind the curtain, you know the game now, and you'll never pay the sticker price again.
Daniel's first assignment is basically to go lose his negotiation virginity on a shelving quote, pick a vendor, get the number, ask the question, and report back.
If he freezes up, he can always fall back on the written script. Literally write, is there any flexibility on the price, on a piece of paper and have it in his pocket. Nobody has to know. The vendor just hears a confident question.
Before Daniel goes and gets his 700 shekels, I want to zoom out and look at why shelving and storage specifically is this weird negotiation sweet spot. Because if you don't understand the category, you'll either negotiate on the wrong things or not negotiate on the right ones.
Think about what shelving actually is as a product. It's not a commodity item with a barcode that scans the same price everywhere. It's often semi-custom. You're specifying depth, height, number of shelves, weight rating, finish. The moment a product has configurable elements, the vendor's cost becomes less transparent, which means their pricing becomes more flexible. They're not selling you a box, they're assembling a solution.
The price isn't anchored to a manufacturer's MSRP that every competitor also uses. It's anchored to whatever the vendor thinks this particular configuration is worth to this particular buyer.
And these vendors are typically small to medium operations. The person giving you the quote might be the owner, or at least someone with real pricing authority. They can make a decision in 5 seconds that a retail chain employee would need 3 levels of management approval for. That's a structural advantage for negotiation.
The third piece is that shelving and storage are gateway purchases. Nobody buys one shelf and then never buys storage again. You furnish a room, then a garage, then an office, then you tell your cousin who's renovating. The vendor knows the lifetime value of a customer is way higher than the margin on the first transaction.
Compare that to buying a washing machine. You buy one every 8 to 10 years. The salesperson knows they'll probably never see you again. There's zero incentive to discount because there's zero future relationship to invest in. The entire transaction is optimized for extraction, not relationship.
The real cost of not asking isn't just the 15 to 25% on this purchase. It's that you're setting the price anchor for every future purchase with that vendor. Pay the inflated quote once, and that's your number forever.
That's the part Daniel is actually sensing when he talks about long-term relationships. He's worried that negotiating will damage the relationship, but the real relationship damage is establishing yourself as the customer who pays full freight. That's not a relationship, that's a revenue stream. The vendor has no incentive to treat specially.
There's almost a paradox here. The cringe Daniel feels comes from wanting to preserve the relationship, but the relationship is better preserved by negotiating than by not negotiating. The polite thing is actually the ask.
Because the ask signals, I plan to be around. It signals, I'm worth your time beyond this transaction. A customer who negotiates is a customer who's thinking about the long game. A customer who silently pays and leaves might never come back, and the vendor knows it.
Let's talk about where the 15 to 25% buffer actually comes from. Because once you understand why vendors do it, the whole thing stops feeling personal. It's not that they're trying to trick anyone. It's that they serve two different types of customers. The ones who just pay whatever's on the quote, and the ones who push back. If you set your price at the floor, you leave money on the table from the first group. If you set it higher, you capture that surplus but leave room for the second group to negotiate down to a number that still works for you.
The buffer is basically a sorting mechanism. The price itself figures out which kind of buyer you are. And the vendor doesn't mind either outcome. If you pay full price, great, they made more. If you negotiate, also, great, they made the sale at a margin they're perfectly happy with. The only outcome they don't want is you walking away because the price was too high and you were too uncomfortable to say so.
That last scenario is the one Daniel's living in. The vendor would rather sell at $3,800 than lose the sale entirely, but they'll never know that's the choice unless Daniel speaks up.
This is where the psychology gets really interesting. There's research on what negotiation scholars call the likability trap. The fear that asking for better terms will make you seem difficult, and that being difficult will cost you the relationship. But the data doesn't back that up. In B2B contexts, buyers who negotiate are rated as more competent, not less likable. The vendor's internal reaction isn't "what a pain." It's okay, this person knows what they're doing.
The cringe is protecting against a social cost that doesn't actually exist.
In B2B, yes. The social cost exists in consumer settings. If you haggle over a latte, the barista will think you're difficult, but that's because you're violating the norms of that context. In a shelving warehouse in Tel Aviv, not negotiating is the norm violation.
Which means overriding the cringe isn't about becoming a different person. It's about correctly identifying which context you're in. Daniel doesn't need to become brazen. He needs to recognize that the warehouse isn't Super Farm, and the rules are different.
There's a practical trick that helps with the psychology. Before you even talk to the vendor, decide on your walk-away price. The number you'd be happy with, not the dream price. The number where you'd say done without hesitation. Having that locked in beforehand does two things. It gives you a clear target, and it makes the negotiation feel less like a confrontation and more like a puzzle. You're just trying to find out if their floor and your ceiling overlap.
That reframes the whole interaction. You're not trying to extract something from them. You're trying to discover whether a deal exists that works for both of you.
And if their floor is above your ceiling, you walk away. No hard feelings. You weren't compatible on price, same way two people might not be compatible on a delivery timeline. It's not personal, it's just business. And for once, that cliche actually applies.
What about the fear of insulting them with a low offer? I think that's the other half of the cringe. Daniel's not just worried about asking. He's worried about asking for too much and offending the vendor.
That's where the question frame earns its keep again. Is there any flexibility? Does it name a number? It lets the vendor make the first move. You're not saying, "I think this is worth $3,000." You're saying, "Is this the best you can do?" and letting them decide how much room there is. If they come back with $3,800, you haven't insulted anyone. They name the number, not you.
If they say, "What did you have in mind?" the classic counter, you're not trapped. You can say, "I was hoping to be closer to $3,500, but I'm open to finding something that works." That's not a demand. It's an invitation to collaborate.
Notice the structure. "I was hoping" is about your expectations, not their pricing. "I'm open" signals flexibility. Neither phrase corners the vendor or forces them to defend their initial quote. You're building a bridge, not a battleground.
We've got the buffer explained, the psychology diagnosed, and the phrasing toolkit assembled. But I want to ground this with a concrete contrast, because the difference between negotiable and non-negotiable categories is where most people get tripped up. Let's compare shelving to something definitively non-negotiable, like buying a laptop from a chain store.
Walk into any electronics chain in Israel. The price on the laptop is the price. The salesperson might have discretion to throw in a free mouse or a carrying case, but the sticker price itself is fixed. Because the margins on consumer electronics are razor thin, we're talking single-digit percentages. There's no buffer to negotiate with, even if the salesperson wanted to. And more importantly, the person you're talking to has no authority to change prices. The system won't let them.
Whereas the shelving vendor might be the owner, or at least a manager, who knows the actual cost of goods, and has been told, "Don't go below X, but use your judgment."
And the shelving vendor's margins are completely different. Custom or semi-custom products have higher margins, because they include service, configuration, maybe installation. The vendor isn't just moving boxes, they're providing expertise. That expertise is valuable, but it also creates pricing flexibility that a commodity product doesn't have.
The rule of thumb is, if the product is standardized, sold through a chain, and the person you're talking to needs manager approval to adjust anything, consumer pricing. If the product is customized or configurable, sold by a small to medium vendor, and the person you're talking to seems to have actual authority, B2B pricing, even if you're buying as an individual.
Shelving sits right in that sweet spot. It's configurable, it's sold by specialists, and the person quoting you probably has discretion. Daniel's instinct that there's more flexibility than meets the eye is almost certainly correct. The question isn't whether the flexibility exists, it's whether he'll ask.
You mentioned earlier that negotiating can actually strengthen a vendor relationship, not weaken it. I want to sit with that, because it's counterintuitive. Most people assume any pushback on price creates friction. You're saying the opposite.
In Israeli B2B culture specifically, yes. Studies of business negotiations in Israel consistently find that directness is read as competence. When you ask about price flexibility, you're signaling that you understand how these transactions work. You're not just a random person who wandered in off the street. You're someone who knows the market has a floor and a list price, and you're respectfully asking to meet somewhere in between.
The vendor's internal reaction isn't, here comes a difficult customer. It's here comes someone who might actually close.
That matters because vendors allocate their time and attention based on who they think is serious. A buyer who negotiates is a buyer who's engaged. They're thinking about value, they're comparing options, they're doing the math. That's the kind of customer worth investing in. The person who silently pays full price might be gone tomorrow. The person who negotiates is planning to stick around.
Which flips Daniel's entire framework. He thinks he's protecting the relationship by not pushing, but the vendor might actually respect him less, or at least invest less in the relationship, because he didn't engage on price.
Here's the practical version. Let's say Daniel buys shelving for 4,500 shekels without negotiating. 3 months later, he needs more. He calls the same vendor. What's the quote going to be? Probably 4,500 again, maybe more. There's no relationship momentum. But if he negotiated to 3,800 the first time, the second conversation starts from a place of mutual understanding. Same deal as last time? That's a relationship. That's repeat business with a known price anchor.
The negotiation isn't a one-time extraction. It's the first step in establishing what the actual price is between you and this vendor going forward.
And that leads into something even more powerful, the bundle strategy. Daniel's buying shelving and storage solutions, plural. He's probably not buying one single shelf. He's furnishing a space. That means he has leverage. He might not even realize he has.
The anchor and bundle. Instead of haggling item by item, you make the whole order the unit of negotiation.
This is where the psychology shifts completely. Asking for a discount on a single shelf feels petty. You're arguing over 50 shekels. But saying if I buy all 6 units from you, what kind of package price can we do? That's not petty. That's a volume conversation. The vendor's thinking about the total sale, not the margin on one piece.
It also changes what you're asking for. You're not saying, give me a lower price. You're saying, let's structure this so it makes sense for both of us at this scale.
The cash angle layers on top of that beautifully. What if I pay cash for the whole order? That's a different conversation entirely. The vendor's calculating their actual cost, payment processing fees, invoicing overhead, maybe some tax considerations they'd rather not say out loud. Cash simplifies everything for them, and they'll often price that in.
The bundle plus cash combo is basically the negotiation equivalent of a 1-2 punch. You're increasing the total value of the sale while simultaneously reducing their friction on the transaction side.
You're doing it without ever saying, this is too expensive, or you're overcharging. The entire framing is positive. I want to give you more business and make it easy for you to accept. What can you do for me in return?
That's the kind of framing that makes the vendor feel like they're winning too, which is the whole point. A good negotiation doesn't leave one side feeling taken.
Now, the third lever is the one I think Daniel is most likely underusing, and it connects directly to his long-term concern. The future business card. Explicitly telling the vendor you plan to buy more later isn't bragging or bluffing. It's giving them information they need to make a smarter decision.
Let's make this concrete. Daniel's furnishing something now. He probably has more rooms, more storage needs, more projects coming. Even if he hasn't fully planned them yet, the intention is real.
Then he should say so. And the phrasing matters. There's a specific case study worth looking at. A small business owner buying office shelving. She tells the vendor, I'm planning to furnish 3 more rooms next year. If we can agree on a good price for this order, I'll come back to you for the rest. The vendor gives her 10% off on the spot.
10% for a sentence. And the vendor's not losing. They're locking in a customer who just told them there are 3 more orders coming.
Compare that to someone who buys a single shelf, asks for a discount, and says nothing about the future. The vendor says no because there's no incentive. The ask is identical. The framing is completely different. One is, do me a favor. The other is, let's build something.
Daniel's entire question was about not wanting to damage long-term relationships. The future business framing is literally the opposite of damaging. It's relationship construction. You're telling the vendor, I see you as my go-to person for this category.
Which, by the way, is music to a small business owner's ears. In a market where customers can comparison shop on their phones while standing in your showroom, hearing, I want to keep coming back to you, is worth real money.
We've got the relationship investment angle, the bundle strategy, and the future business card. But there's a practical piece underneath all of this that Daniel needs to hear, the preparation. Because the reason most people freeze up isn't that they don't know what to say. It's that they haven't decided what they want before the conversation starts.
Preparation is the cringe killer. If you walk in knowing three numbers, the price you'd be happy with, the price you'd walk away from, and the first phrase you're going to say, the whole interaction feels different. You're not improvising under pressure, you're executing a plan.
The happy price and the walk-away price are especially important because they prevent you from getting caught in the moment and either accepting too little or pushing too hard. If the vendor comes back with a number above your walk-away, you know what to do. You say, I appreciate it, but that's more than I can do right now, and you leave. No awkwardness, no second-guessing. You made the decision in advance.
The research piece matters too. Before you even talk to the vendor, spend 10 minutes online. Check what similar shelving costs from other suppliers. Ask a friend who bought something comparable. You don't need perfect intelligence. You just need a rough sense of the market range so you can recognize whether the quote you're getting is reasonable or inflated.
There's something almost meditative about that prep work. You're not just arming yourself for negotiation. You're calming the part of your brain that panics because it doesn't know what's normal.
The phrase practice is the last piece. Literally say the words out loud before you go. Is there any flexibility on the price? Say it in the car. Say it to your spouse. Say it to the mirror. It sounds ridiculous, but the goal is to make the phrase feel familiar in your mouth, so when the moment comes, it doesn't feel like you're doing something daring. It just feels like the next thing you were going to say anyway.
The first time I ever negotiated anything substantial, I had my opening line written on a scrap of paper in my pocket. Didn't need it. But knowing it was there made the whole thing feel like I had a safety net.
The safety net is for your psychology, not for the vendor. The vendor doesn't know you're nervous. They just hear a confident question. And confidence in negotiation is mostly preparation that looks like instinct.
If Daniel does the prep, researches pricing, sets his numbers, practices his phrasing, he's not walking in as someone who's bad at this. He's walking in as someone who did their homework. And that's a different person.
Let's boil this down to what Daniel can actually do. Three things, all of them usable tomorrow.
First is the question frame. Is there any flexibility on the price? Or is that your best price? These are not demands. They're not even really negotiations yet. They're just inquiries. And the phrasing does something clever. It makes the price the subject, not the vendor. You're not saying you're charging too much. You're saying I'm curious whether this number has room to breathe.
The research backs up why this works. A question invites collaboration. A demand invites resistance. When you say, give me a discount, the vendor's instinct is to defend their position. When you say, is there any flexibility, you're inviting them to reconsider voluntarily. Same outcome, completely different emotional path.
The second one, always mention future business if it's true. Even a vague, I'll probably need more of these down the line, shifts the vendor's math. They stop thinking about margin on one order and start thinking about lifetime value.
You don't need a detailed roadmap, just the honest statement that this isn't a one-off. I'm furnishing a few spaces over the next year, and I'd rather keep coming back to someone I trust than shop around each time. That's not a negotiation tactic. That's just telling the vendor the truth about your situation.
Which is why it doesn't feel aggressive. You're not manipulating anyone. You're giving them information that helps them make a smarter decision about how to price your business.
The third one is where most people leave money on the table. The negotiation doesn't end at the first no. If the vendor says the price is firm, you pivot. What about a discount for cash? Can you throw in delivery? Any flexibility on installation? You're not being pushy. You're just exploring the full landscape of what's negotiable, and price is only one dimension.
In Israel, cash payment can unlock things that the sticker price never would, for reasons that are between the vendor and their accountant.
Here's the pre-purchase checklist. Before you talk to any vendor, write down three things. 1. The price you'd be happy with, the number where you'd say yes without hesitation. 2, the price you'd walk away from. 3, the exact phrase you're going to use to start the conversation. Write it down. Have it ready.
Then just ask. That's the whole thing. The preparation is what makes the asking possible. You're not walking in cold, hoping to be brazen. You're walking in with a plan.
Here's what I keep coming back to. We're talking about negotiation as this human ritual. The pause, the question, the silence, the relationship. But what happens when the vendor isn't a person anymore? When the quote comes from an AI pricing engine that's already calculated your willingness to pay based on your browsing history, your location, the time of day?
The negotiation buffer doesn't disappear in that world. It just gets more.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.